Hey, this is Father Voskin, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast about life and love, about spirituality, and all things spiritual. The Next Step is a podcast that allows you to look at the very fabric of life through some very ancient lenses, polished up in a rather new manner. We call that polish Armenian Orthodoxy, Armadoxy. Now, this podcast is being made possible by the folks at Apostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Expanding and Electronic Universe. So if you're ready, we invite you to run, crawl, walk, whatever it takes. If you'd like, just sit back and enjoy The Next Step. It is another scorcher here in the Southern California area, and so I said it, sit back and relax. You get one more week. Can you believe it's the end of August already? We're at the beginning of September. And well, we've got the Labor Day weekend. Yes, Labor Day is coming up. Big festival kind of like atmosphere here in the United States because you get 3 or 4 days off. So we are celebrating and it's unofficially the end of summer. And you wouldn't feel it. Summer's ending. I mean, it is really hot. So if you hear that little fan noise in the background, that's my air conditioning hitting me. I just couldn't take it. But I hope you're doing okay wherever you're at. And if you're out on the East Coast, our thoughts are with you. Hope you get through this hurricane season, definitely. But I hear that the next few days we've got some incredible hurricanes hitting that region as well. Our thoughts are with you. Just stay safe. Just, you know, when I think of hurricanes, I always think of those like tornado situations that were made popular from Wizard of Oz, you know, the whole house going up. And then you see some of these things. We just commemorated the 5th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, and they've been showing clips on TV, on news broadcasts. They've been sharing those clips from 5 years. I mean, we do forget how quickly we forget. And it was just really wild to see some of those scenes because, you know, a lot of stuff did happen that shouldn't have happened. It was interesting because it almost seems like 5 years later, the shift has changed. And always there's people who will throw out that bit about the act of God. But it was interesting because 5 years later, the analysis is it's not the act of God that destroyed so many lives. It was the act of people and the unwillingness to reach out, the unpreparedness of the people. And of course, those levees that broke, those are man-made disasters. I remember back in Armenia, back in 1988, there was almost a 7-point earthquake. I believe it was 6.9, which here in California, we weather pretty easily. I mean, I shouldn't say easily. I mean, we've had our share of earthquakes and there is damage, but you don't have the mass scale of damage that you had in Armenia, 25 to 50,000 deaths over there. And I remember the scenes of Armenia and at that time the President Gorbachev going through the ruins, the rubble of the earthquake and putting his hand on these walls which were just basically crumbling in his hands and showing that, you know, government workers had not put in cement in these walls, had just plastered it with sand and taken the cement to do their own work, and showing the scandalous situation of communism, of the work ethic. And again, we're coming on Labor Day. These are all pertinent topics that I'm throwing out at you, you know. And in fact, our song of the day just connects with this so beautifully. I've been thinking all morning, how is it going to connect? You're going to see how it connects. It is so wild how these things all come together. But I do remember that scene in Armenia, 1988. And there it was just a few days ago as they were reminiscing on Katrina. They were showing pictures of the ruins, of people being stranded, of the flooding. And then they also showed what caused the flooding. and it was because of these levees put together by human beings, man-made disaster. Again, yes, obviously, hurricanes, tornadoes, these are things that are part of the weather system that circles our globe, the planet Earth. Yes, these things do happen. Earthquakes happen. It's part of the system of, you know, the Earth settling, of tectonic plates coming together, hitting each other. Yes, these things do happen. But why do buildings collapse? Yes, part of it is because of the Earth, but the bigger part is because we haven't taken the responsibility for our actions. It's the easiest thing is to say, yes, it's an act of God. It's an act of God. That sounds really good. It's cute. It's like the child who does something and then he turns around and he looks at his mom and says, the devil made me do it. Or, you know, it was my invisible brother. You know, it's scapegoating. Yeah, it's an act of God. Hey, what about our responsibility? Okay, there are acts of God, definitely. Hurricanes, tornadoes, these things do happen. But what about our responsibility? And likewise, what is our responsibility after these events? I've got to tell you, I'm not a big fan of these Emmy Awards and Academy Awards, because I just think that they're just so pretentious. But I was taken this week when they gave a special Emmy Award to George Clooney. And I had a chance to meet him a few years ago when we were working on this campaign to divest California from Darfur. And it was interesting because, first of all, I found him to be just such a true gentleman in the talk that we had, in the few minutes that we shared together. And I thought it was just very interesting because he had reminisced about his aunt, Rosie Clooney, who had sung this Armenian song. Well, not a real Armenian song. It's called Come On to My House, but it was written by Ross Bagdasarian of, you know who he is? The Chipmunk fame, yes. Ross Bagdasarian is the voice of the Chipmunks, Alvin. He had written a song for George's aunt, Rosie Clooney. It was called Come On to My House. And later on, Guy Chakourian had done a version of it in Armenian. Interesting, it went from English to Armenian, though written by an Armenian man. And I just found it very, very interesting how humble Clooney was in accepting a humanitarian Emmy Award. I believe it was called the Bob Hope Humanitarian Award for determined commitment and efforts to increase awareness of human rights issues and spark constructive response to international crisis. That's the official release that was presented by the Emmy Awards Committee. Now, Clooney, in his acceptance remarks, this is really, really important, what he said. And I really applaud him for his sincerity and humility. I mean, it was very touching, at least for me. Clooney made some jokes at the beginning, but he concluded his remarks like this. He said, when disaster happens, everybody wants to help. Everybody in this room wants to help. Everybody at home wants to help. The hard part is 7 months later, 5 years later, when we're onto a new story. Honestly, we fail at that most of the time. That's the facts. I fail at it. So here's hoping that some very bright person right here in this room or at home watching can help find a way to keep the spotlight burning on these heartbreaking situations that continue to be heartbreaking after the cameras go away. That would be an impressive accomplishment. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Clooney. Thank you, George Clooney. That is beautiful. It really said it all. Because so many times we just forget. Yes, when that disaster happens and you see it coming into your living room on the TV, you see it on your computer screen, sure, you're the first one who wants to help. But soon it's forgotten. I remember LA Times. I'll never forget this. This is back in the year 2008, I believe it was. And we were honoring Gabriel Starring as the In His Shoes Person of the Year. And I called up the reporter, a very good friend of mine that I know on the LA Times staff. And I said, would you cover this story? Here is a man who is going out to the Darfurian refugee camps in Chad. And, you know, here's an opportunity to let the world know what's going on in Darfur. Genocide. Here is a chance. And this reporter basically told me that they would love to do it, but the LA Times editor had decided that they had, this is her words, they had given enough coverage to Darfur for that particular time frame. Well, I forgot if it was for that last week or for the last month or whatever it was. And so basically they didn't want to cover this event. And the same thing, all of these things are happening. What was that called? It was called Blood Diamonds or Diamond Blood. It was about the Congo. And there was a movie that really inspired a lot of people to stop investing in those diamonds because there was blood behind them. And people have forgotten. But fortunately, I was just reading just the other day that, you know, some technology companies are bringing up the battle because, well, in the Congo, they are mining for all of those precious metals that are used in the technological gadgets that we use. Our iPhones, our droids, our cameras. They're using those very special metals that conduct electricity in a very special way. And so there's now talk that, okay, if it wasn't mined properly, if it's coming from the Congo, you need to boycott it. And this is really important because you can't let your guard down. You've got to always be there. And George Clooney just hit it right on the head. It's easy when you're seeing it. The difficult thing is to remember that there are people dying every single day. This week, President Obama declared that basically the war in Iraq is finished, that our troops are coming home. He mentioned that the troops that are staying there will take on a different position. They won't be in combat. They'll be advising and helping the Iraqi people stand up. How many people remember that we went into Iraq? How many people remember that we've been fighting a war? I mean, so many times you just go and look and it's business as usual. We're talking about Lindsay Lohan being stuck in jail someplace, about Paris Hilton and her boyfriend and her car reeking of marijuana. These are the stories that capture our attention, and we forget that there's wars happening all the time. There's kids dying right now in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Africa, and right down the street from you, in the streets. Yes, here in America, in Canada, in Europe, in all of the places that you never... I remember going to England just a few years ago and just marveling at, you know, at antiquity. There was so much history all around you. But you turn a corner and there's people right on the streets. Junkies shooting up on the streets. Hey, it's happening all over. We don't have a right to forget. We don't have a right to forget. In fact, let me just read that again, what George Clooney said. It was so beautifully said. He says that I hope someone in this room can help find a way to keep the spotlight burning on these heartbreaking situations that continue to be heartbreaking long after the cameras go away. Today's song of the day is a special one from a musician we've come to love and respect, Gor Mkhitaryan. And before, I had picked out this song earlier, before we do this show, I pick out a few of them and I ask Ken to get them all queued up so we're ready to go as we do the show prep. And I was wondering, there was something about this song, I didn't know how it was going to fit in. And somewhere along the show, I know some of you more astute listeners a few minutes ago figured out when it clicked with me. Because whether it's my sermons or these next steps, I know I'm out of control at some point. At some point, I just really submit and I release. And I know that we are being guided by a higher force. I know that God's Spirit is with us in this ministry. And so it was a few minutes ago when it all clicked. Why did I pick this song? It's called Cold Wagon. It comes to us from 1993. It was a time when Armenia had just declared its independence a couple years ago, and they were suffering through one of the worst winters ever recorded. So cold that actually the people went down and started chopping down the forest so that they could have wood, they could have some material to heat up their lives. Gor Mkhitaryan, Cold Wagon.
Serpent slithers on, a curving its way through winter's white. I am all alone in this boxcar, shaking from the cold, shaking from fright. All I wish, all that I desire, some brewed wine, dish of rose.
Mkhitaryan, Cold Wagon. That's off of the Gor album, an album of his own name. Came out a few years ago, and it's available just about anywhere that good music is sold. You could find it on the internet. And look up Gor Mkhitaryan. I mean, this is a musician that really, really needs to be explored. He is so deep in his lyrics, in his musical compositions. Just were really happy with this relationship that we have with him, and always a pleasure to be able to play some of his music. Cold Wagon, another reminder, as we said a few minutes ago, that hey, you can't forget just because the cameras, well, turned away.
As I'm being followed by a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow, leaping and hopping on a moon shadow, moon shadow.
Well, I'm going to do something a little bit different today, because as I was preparing for today's show, we had a lot of ideas, and of course, I wanted to get in Labor Day because I think it's so important. You know, like I was thinking about it the other day, how labor is used, how work is being used, really to fund all of the other things that we take for granted, including our playtime, our leisure time, right? The more you work, the better leisure you can afford. But what's that quality of leisure when you're really just exhausted and can't enjoy it? And of course, it also affects many different aspects. And I was thinking about how, you know, that leisure has replaced our sense of worship. Basically, worship is sort of that leisurely thing that you do if you have nothing else to do, you know. Well, if we got a little bit of time, we'll throw a little nod over to God. And I was thinking about this not only because of Labor Day, because President Obama declared the end of the war in Iraq. And, you know, my first reaction was, thank God. I mean, I really mean that. And I'm not talking about it in a pious way. Hardly. I'm the last person you would call pious, you know. But it was just, all of a sudden, as we're listening to this news come over, you know, I'm thinking like there should be, you know, dancing on in the streets. And certainly at a Armenian church, particularly the one where I serve in Glendale, where you have such a large group of Iraqi refugees, you would think that maybe they'd start lining up to light some candles, offer a prayer of thanksgiving. And it's just not there. It's not there, this idea of thanking God. And I think it goes with this leisurely, lackadaisical attitude that we have towards religion. That it's great to be, you know, to be in communion with God when you need him. But hey, when we don't need him, you know, a nod will do. And this is something that has bothered me for a long time. And it goes, of course, hand in hand what we were talking about George Clooney's comments about forgetting. About as time going by, you do forget. And so as I was preparing for today's podcast, just this morning I get word that, okay, I know. Are you ready for this? Ani is not going to be with us. Yep, no Ani's bubbles today. I know, major disappointment. But as I was just thinking about what was going on, and I had just gotten word of that, I'm listening to the radio in the car. And it's this local talk show, and the host of the talk show is reading an article from Fortune Small Business. Okay, what does this have to do with our podcast? Well, first of all, my podcast, as you know, it's sort of like an audio blog. So, in a sense, I know this is kind of apologetic, but I am going to be looking at this article, and I'm going to share it with you. And it's going to take the place of today's Ani's Bubbles without you getting too upset about it. I think you'll understand why, because, yes, it comes from Fortune Small Business, but it has a message that is very appropriate to spirituality, and especially this weekend on Labor Day. So if you'll indulge me, if you'll trust me, I'd like to share this with you. It's from Fortune Small Business, Tom Monahan, Domino Pizza Pioneer. It's written by Julie Sloan, and I believe Tom Monahan is credited on there too, so he's probably contributed to the article. Tom Monahan sums up his life as a great Horatio Alger story, and he's not being boastful. Monahan's father died on Christmas Eve when he was 4. His mother, not up to single parenting, sent him to the Michigan orphanage run by Polish nuns, and he later went to a series of foster homes. Unable to pay for college, he bought a single pizza place in 1960 in Michigan. That would ultimately grow into Domino's Pizza Empire, now with more than 7,000 locations and some $4 billion in annual sales. Along the way, Monahan managed to buy himself a few treats, including an enormous collection of classical cars, several Frank Lloyd Wright houses, and even the Detroit Tigers baseball team. But after renouncing such worldly pleasures, now do you believe me? But after renouncing such worldly pleasures, he cashed out of Domino's in 1999 for a reported $1 billion to focus on religious and philanthropic work. A devout Catholic who attends Mass daily, the ex-CEO has already helped found a religious college called Ave Maria, and last month he unveiled plans to build the largest Catholic church in the United States. From his office at Domino's Farms in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Monahan tells his story, a tale with all the toppings. I determined I was going to be a priest from the time I was in second grade. I entered the seminary in 10th grade, but got kicked out. I think probably because I was rambunctious than most kids. More rambunctious. I got into pillow fights in the dorms. I got caught talking in study hall. The rector told me when I packed my bags at Easter to pack them for good. I floundered during the rest of high school and graduated last in my class. They weren't even going to graduate me, but I pleaded with the nun. She said, "Well, you got good marks in seminary, so I'll let you graduate, but don't ever ask me to recommend you for college." I saved up enough money driving a truck to attend Ferris State College in Big Rapids, Michigan, where I went for a quarter, earned good marks, and got accepted at the University of Michigan. But I didn't have any money. I ended up joining the Marine Corps in 1956, which was the best experience I could have had. One day in 1960, my brother told me about a pizza shop in Michigan called Dominick's that a friend of his was selling. My brother was interested but afraid to do it on his own, so he asked me if I'd do it with him. I was having problems paying my way through school, so I said yes. It was $500 down, and we borrowed $900. I got a 15-minute lesson in making pizza from Dominick, and I was off. We opened up without an attorney. I didn't even collect sales tax. Didn't know I had to. The plan was for me to work half the night and my brother to work the other half. But it didn't work because he didn't want to leave his full-time job as a mailman. Within about 8 months, he wanted out. And I bought him out by giving him the Volkswagen we used for deliveries. For the first year, I was busy all the time, but I wasn't making any money. I couldn't pay the bills. My life was going down the tubes. I had all this debt. College was out of the picture. One Sunday night, most of the employees didn't show up. That was our busiest night. We were on campus then, and the dorms didn't serve meals on Sundays. And I didn't know whether to open or not because we had only half of our help. Someone said, "Why don't you just cut out the 6-inch pizzas?" We had 5 sizes, but most of our business was the 6-inch. It took just as long to make as the big one and just as much time to deliver, but cost less. I decided we would try that, and if we got behind, we'd pull the phones. That was our plan. We never got busy, and yet we made 50% more money that night than we ever had. All of a sudden, I was making money, just like that. The next night, I cut out the 9-inch pizza, and all the bills caught up. I learned then that keeping things simple could be profitable. I bought another place and then another. All 3 were in the same county, and I wanted to get them all under the same name, but I couldn't use Dominic's name because Dominick wouldn't let me. So we had to come up with something else. One day, an employee came back from delivering a pizza and said, "I've got our new name, Domino's." I said, "That's great. I've never heard of Domino's Pizza before. It was Italian, and we could use a Domino logo." I decided we'd put 3 dots on the Domino because we had 3 stores. And every time we added one, we'd add a dot. You can see I wasn't thinking of a national chain back then. But I started getting big ideas. My pizzerias at the University of Michigan and Michigan State were probably the busiest in the country. We sold about 3,000 pizzas a week at each store. In the late 1960s, I attended a franchise seminar at Boston College, and that's when I started getting inspired. I met Ray Kroc. I met John Y. Brown from KFC. These guys flew in on their Lear jets and had their Rolls Royces outside. I said, "Wow, what I've got with this concept of pizza delivery is just as good as what they have. I just don't have as many stores." Delivery at the times was pretty minimal. So I decided to focus on that, and it was the best thing I've done. Nobody thought you could make money on delivery. Most places just delivered to get some volume before they could afford to cut out the delivery. But I thought I could do it. It was a challenge. I just had to figure out how. After meeting all these national chain people, I decided that what I had to do was go public. I met a broker in Detroit. And he told me I needed to get more professional. He said, you can't be a seat of the pants operation like you are now. You've got to hire more guys with MBAs, with degrees. You've got to computerize your accounting. And the main thing he said is that we had to grow. I did everything he said. 1969, I went from 12 stores to 44 in 10 months. But I had all of these employees around and I didn't know what they were doing. I had a computer. I'd financed all these franchises, but they weren't doing any business. It wasn't that they were doing poor business, they weren't doing any business. I had the busiest pizzerias in the world and the slowest pizzerias, all in the same chain. Now he goes on in this article, and I'm going to invite you to read it because it is just so fascinating, and I'm going to just basically summarize it. He runs into some trouble right now. Because he basically doesn't know how to manage this chain of pizzerias. And even the bank steps in and the bank tries to run it and they can't. And they end up giving it back to him. And they suggest that he declare bankruptcy. He says, I couldn't declare bankruptcy. I thought there was more... There was a more than likely chance that someone would force me into bankruptcy, but I wasn't going to be the one who did it. I remember how exciting it was when we were growing, and I wanted to get that feeling back. All the lawsuits I got, I defended them myself. I couldn't afford an attorney. I was living in a house with no furniture and driving old delivery cars. I got to know the judge really well, and he saved my shirt. Long story short, he makes it. He makes it! And I really invite you to read the entire article and really, really get a feel of what he had to go through. I'm going to skip to the end and get to the part that we're going to be focusing on because it is really an inspiring story. I was finally getting my act together and could do a lot of things I really wanted to do. We designed incentive programs for managers, for franchisees. We started national conventions and advertising on a large basis. I was making money like I had never in my life. There were more stores all the time. Sales were going up. The system was clicking. I think something happened to me because of the success and the media attention. After all these years of making wish lists, I went a little overboard in material buying. Worldly things. It started with the Detroit Tigers in 1983. I also bought Domino's Farms, a 1,700-acre complex in Ann Arbor where Domino's had its corporate headquarters, and bought 244 collector cars. I bought the largest Frank Lloyd Wright collection in the world, including a couple of Frank Lloyd Wright houses. I justified it by saying it was an investment. The cars, I'd been a car buff my whole life, and I knew what would go up in value and what wouldn't. Now we all know this game, right? It's called justifying. It's making sense out of senselessness, right? We all do it, right? Cars tied in with delivery. So I thought Domino's car collection made sense. Domino's Farms would attract top help. The airplanes, they were time savers. Time is money. At the same time, I'd been getting involved in religious work. I started a foundation in 1983 because I saw needs out there and I wanted to fill them. I started an organization of Catholic CEOs. I bought a cathedral in Managua, Nicaragua. I also did some promotion for pro-life causes. As a result, Domino's ended up with a national boycott from the National Organization of Women. After that, I realized I couldn't just do the things I wanted to do. I couldn't jeopardize the franchisees and employees. Yet I thought these things were important. So in 1989, I decided to sell the business and spend the rest of my life serving the Catholic Church. I announced I was stepping aside as president to show a buyer that the company could get along with it without me. I thought Domino's would be sold in a matter of months, but that went on for 2.5 years. Meanwhile, the company deteriorated. Pizza Hut got into the delivery business and took over our lead. Little Caesars took off. We showed others how to do it, and they did it better than us. I didn't have any choice but to come back. We were $500 million in debt. The turnaround took longer than I thought it would. It was just a day-to-day thing, getting back to basics, trying to run the stores better, get the delivery times down. In that time, I made another change. I read a book by C.S. Lewis called Mere Christianity. There's a chapter in there on pride, and it hit me right between the eyes. It basically said that sometimes when you work harder than other people and set higher goals than other people, you do it for the wrong reasons, so that you have more than other people. And that's pride. I was taught pride was the greatest sin, and I realized, my gosh, I thought those things were virtues. I'm probably the biggest sinner in the world. So I changed. I took a millionaire's vow of poverty and sold most of my big possessions. I don't drive luxury cars. I don't fly first class. I don't own yachts, airplanes, any ostentatious things. It was a tremendous sense of freedom. I even sold the Tigers. We didn't find a buyer for Domino's until 1999, Bain Capital. But once we did, I sold the company in 14 weeks. A lot of people thought I couldn't live without Domino's, but I didn't miss it. What I'm doing now has so much more meaning to me. The idea of founding a Catholic college had been brewing it for years in my mind. So we started Ave Maria College in Michigan, 1997. We bought an old abandoned schoolhouse and had probably a dozen full-time students that first year. And then in 1999, we started Ave Maria Law School. My goal now is to have the finest Catholic university and law school in the world. We were going to move the campus to Domino's Farm, but we couldn't persuade the township to buy the idea of a university here. So I prayed about it a lot, and my answer was to put it in Naples, Florida. I'd vacationed there many times and enjoyed it. Naples has great weather, and there are a few Catholic universities in Florida in the southeast. Built a permanent campus in the style of Frank Lloyd Wright, the main chapel on campus will have the largest seating capacity of any Catholic church in the United States. I'm thankful that I have my faith, because I couldn't have gotten through Domino's without it. I don't think anyone in business has a tougher time than I had. My faith sustained me when we had internal problems with franchisees. When the media would write nasty things, I've lived by my faith as well. I've always tried to be fair in everything that I've done. When I got into trouble, there were always suppliers who trusted me, had faith in me. I've always been able to attract good employees, and I'm lucky. Now, a small addendum to the story is that he also wanted to put the world's largest crucifix. I believe it's something like 95 feet or something like that. I don't have the stats. And the Jesus figure on that crucifix, something like 65 feet. And he decided against it because of the soft economy right now. It's more important to put seats in the college and let kids have their education than it was to build giant crucifixes. It sounds like a very practical person with a very practical faith. And I wanted to share this story with you because it is Labor Day. It is a time for us to reflect on our labors. It is also a story that is inspiring, that no matter what you do, there is an end goal to our labor. It's not about getting more planes, about getting more houses, more cars. It's about what you do with the product of that labor. We all struggle. We all try to make it. And there are basic necessities in life that are essential. You need to have the food to survive. You need to have shelter. But don't discount the importance of having love in your life. Here is a person who lost everything a few times. In the beginning, with the death of his parents, throughout life with the death of his businesses, with people coming down on him, but finally it was a death and a surrender that he chose. He chose to walk away from it because there was a bigger goal in life. And that's so important. That's the message for this Labor Day. As we look on our labors, what do we surrender? What do we surrender to? And what are our goals? He chose that death. He chose to walk away because there were bigger things to pursue. He chose to kill himself, the ego and the pride, because they were based on false wealth. We too need to take a look inside, to submit to the goals, to the beauty of life, and say that those things that we are pursuing matter only if they can be measured in the good that they do for others, not in how fat our wallets are, how large our portfolios have become, how padded our pockets are. He who loves his life will lose it, says our Lord. He who hates his life, who dismisses the ego, shall keep it for eternal life. It's an offer that's made to us, always, but particularly on this Labor Day. As I mentioned, this story touched me. I don't know how it reverberated for you, but I ask you to read it. There's a link to it on our show notes, and it was very touching and inspiring for me. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you're inclined to walk away from your million-dollar businesses and are looking for something to do, some philanthropic work that is just eating away at you, well, here's Susie with a suggestion.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the third year of production and growing daily with new listeners around the globe. This new message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. Epostle.net is the voice of Armadoxy, committed to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we need to avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at the inhisshoes.org website. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie. And like I said, hey, if you've got a few million that's sitting around, you've decided to walk away, I cannot think of a better thing to support right now. Actually, a lot of things to support, but it's also important to get this word out. And that's what Apostle is all about. It's really basically apostolic evangelism, but in a new form. It's taking that evangelical spirit, the apostolic message, and making it arrive at the 21st century in the means that we know how to do. And we've got some great programming at epostle.net. We've got weekly Bible studies Wednesday evenings, where there is a 1 or 2 week break right now. Begins in September, mid-September. And we invite you to join us for those. We've got podcasts and all kinds of resources. We are looking for some money right now to build up our library of resources. And that has been sort of just in the background, but now is going to be necessary as In His Shoes Ministries begins a new phase of its life. And we've been working on it for the last several months, and we're hoping to unveil that new phase in the next few weeks. We hope by the end of September, we're going to have some great news for you. But it all begins with our simple prayer and then a call to action, changing that prayer into action with your donations. Please be generous in your giving, whether it's on our website or sending in a direct deposit, I wanted to say, a direct donation to the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center, 632 West Stocker Street. That's in Glendale, California, 91202.
Skating away. skeleton eyes of the new day.
You know, in today's podcast, I spent quite a bit of time talking, of course, about this example of Tom Monahan, who headed Domino's Pizza, and I did bring in the example of George Clooney, too. And it's important to remember that, yes, there are these people that do make differences in life, but what about the structures? Are you ready to talk a little bit about that? We're going to be looking at that next week when we come back with the next step because, you know, a lot of times we talk about faith as something apart from the structures or the infrastructure. Is it important to have an infrastructure? Well, here in the Los Angeles area, they're building a cathedral. A few years back, it was the Roman Catholic Church at the tune of $200 million built a cathedral, and it angered many folks. Many people who were dealing with the homelessness situation and saying, why aren't we spending that on homelessness and solutions? Definitely in the Armenian community, there are many, many issues that get put under the rug, so to speak. Ostrich mentality. Do we forget about those big problems that are taking place, such as domestic issues, domestic violence issues, such as abortion, which is rampant, is being used as an alternative to birth control. And in its place, we are erecting the Armenian Cathedral is coming up and is going to be consecrated next week at the tune of $16-17 million. And we're going to be looking at that because you'd be surprised. I went through a similar situation where I really didn't believe in the building, but it made a lot of difference. People are attracted. People come to buildings. They want to see something tangible. Why is that? Should that be an issue of faith? Should that be something that we're concerned about or not concerned about, inconsequential? Well, we'll look briefly at that as we return next week with our next step. I have so much to discuss with you, and I just ask for your prayers because it is a very difficult time right now, especially in the Los Angeles area. Because of the economy, it is hitting many, many families. And guess what? You know where they turn? They don't turn to social agencies. They don't turn to government. Their first place is to come kneeling in the sight of God. And we as a church need to be able to answer, to provide answers. And so I need your prayers. I need you to be with me in this very, very vital ministry that is taking place. It is called In His Shoes, and there's a reason for that. We walk in the shoes of others, feeling their pain, feeling and understanding their pain, their sufferings, and in so doing, trying to bring relief, trying to assist, trying to reach out. We invite you to get involved. Inissues.org is our website. And of course, epostle.net. It's the voice of the ministry. And you could find this podcast as well as all the podcasts we've ever done since beginning of time, as well as many other resources for your spiritual journey. Now, I got to tell you, I did have a lot of stuff that I wanted to cover. We had a group of Armenian kids that went into Akhtamar in Turkey. I wanted to talk about that. I wanted to revisit the mosque in Ground Zero. Still talking about it. Wanted to talk about the miners in Chile. And, just a lot of stuff. A lot of information. And you know what? Time doesn't allow it. Because today, I'm going to forego all that. Put it on the agenda for next week. Promise we're going to get to a lot of stuff. Just bear with me. It's kind of, the ride is fun too, isn't it? You got to admit, I'm having fun over here. Ken? Yep, got a thumbs up from Ken too. So, you know, we're having a good time over here, and I hope you're enjoying following this. But I'm going to end today's show with a simple request. I'm going to put a link on our show notes. It is to a YouTube video, and I want you to just watch it. It happens to be Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, this month of September. I didn't know that. Good friend of mine, Diana Biswell, sent me the link. She lost her daughter, I want to say almost 20 years ago, maybe a little bit less, maybe about 16, 17 years ago, to cancer, to leukemia. And little Alyssa was about 14 years old, and she had endeared herself to all of us who knew her. I was her pastor, and many, many days, nights we'd spend at the Stanford Hospital, at the cancer wards, just in prayer, in faith, and in laughter, and in love. Really, you couldn't do anything but love this young girl. And I mention this because if it is this special day to remember, this special month, I ask for a special remembrance, a special prayer for these little children who, no fault of their own, are cursed with this awful disease of cancer taking over their lives. And yet they are blessed because they somehow lead us, yes, in a direction of faith. They are blessed because they really bring out so much love and so much energy all around them that it really symbolizes the new miracles of today. So watch the video. Remember the children. I certainly will. There are so many of them on our website, on our Facebook, on Twitter. We're always remembering so many people that are constantly in need of prayer. Remember the little children all over the world, including in Iraq, in Darfur, in the Congo, in Afghanistan. Little children who can't fend for themselves, who can't speak for themselves, and need us to walk in their shoes. I want to thank you for joining us today. It has been a pleasure to be with you. We will reassemble again next week. In the meantime, I wish you all the best for this Labor Day. And if you're outside of the United States, as so many of our listeners are, well, celebrate labor. Yes, celebrate it. Every day's a celebration, isn't it? For the wonderful people who put this podcast together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, for Ani, who promises to be back next week. This is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.